What's up and welcome to NExpress, the PopOptic.com Nintendo show. I am Tim Mason. With me as always is Ricky D.
Hey, Tim, what's up?
Aaron Santos.
Hello.
And Patrick Murphy.
Hey, guys.
We have a good show for you. I can't wait. It's October, which means it is officially horror month, and so our show is going to be primarily horror. We're going to talk about the game Year Walk, a really good indie title now on the Wii U. We're going to talk about the movie Silent Hill. And we are just going to talk about whatever in our opening segment. You guys, what have you been up to? There's been a lot of games that we're talking about playing. We've all been kind of up to our own thing. What are you up to?
Wow, we were just talking about this. I'm a little bit overwhelmed right now with the website because I'm releasing a list of my 200 favorite horror films of all time. Actually, the 200 best horror films of all time. I know my horror movies, guys. So if you love video games and Nintendo games and you also love horror movies, do check out our website, popoptic.com. Apart from that, I'm trying to dive into some of these indie horror games because we want to review a lot of horror games throughout the month of October. So I'm pretty stoked for the main event. What about you, Patrick?
I have been reading a lot of your best of horror movies, Ricky. And by the way, for anybody who doesn't know, this guy does know a lot about horror movies. Your breadth of knowledge on that subject is incredible. And this is coming from a film student who thought that his own knowledge was pretty vast. Other than that, though, I've been playing a lot of Mario Maker lately. Finally diving into the creating stages thing. I've been playing. I should clarify. It's my brother's copy of Mario Maker. I have not bought the game yet, but I am starting to. It's starting to win me over. Let's put it that way.
So I want to ask you a question because we were talking about this off air. You told me that they've made some adjustments and changes to the game, which I was complaining about last week.
Yeah. So I noticed last night that there are now weekly and monthly leaderboards for stars for games that are highly rated, as opposed to just seeing the exact same, you know, what are those don't move stages up on the leaderboards. There are now different ones showing up. So they finally organized this a little bit. They also gave you an option, I didn't mention this to you earlier. They give you an option to filter things by their difficulty rating. So now you can choose to look for just easy, normal, or hard stages.
Amazing. So wait a minute, but who's deciding the difficulty level? It's still not us, though.
No, I'm guessing that this is still from a clear rate. So, you know, I would guess that anything under, you know, maybe 15% clear rate is considered hard. And then maybe up to anything over 75% is probably easy. I don't know how they do it.
Which means my levels are expert then. That's funny.
Oh, right. God.
Same here. Like, none of my levels have been cleared. And so
Whoa. Don't say none.
Okay, none of them. My last, sorry, Aaron, my last levels have not been cleared. You haven't beaten the ultimate King Kong.
Yeah, I haven't.
And you haven't beaten my 52 impossible to beat level. But shouldn't those levels be on that list of, like, most difficult? Because no one's beaten the levels. And I've had.
Well, listen, you said Dr. Mario's hub was difficult, and I winged that one.
Hold on a second. That was the first level I created like an hour after I purchased the game. This is I'm talking about levels I created like a week after.
Yeah, I'm still.
Okay, so you're saying that next week you're going to tell me that you've beaten my level.
Hey, I'll even beat it after this show, and I'll post a comment.
Okay, so you know, the open source podcast, our sister podcast, they place bets, and our games editor, Mike Werby, actually has to eat a shoe. He actually has a shoe that he cut up and he's going to cook and he's going to eat. So are you willing to place a bet that you can beat my level?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're willing to eat a shoe?
I'm confident I can even make that shoe tasty. you tasted the food that I make in this house as well.
So this is like a win-win scenario for you. Either you beat the level or you get the tasty shoe.
Hold on a second. Aaron's an amazing cook, so no doubt he will make the shoe tasty. But can you beat my level is the question. We'll return to this next week. Aaron, yes. What's going on your side of things?
On my side of things, I'm trying to keep up with two games that I received that I got review codes over the weekend. I'm looking at right now. I'm in the process of playing a game called Soma, which is the latest indie horror game by the guys who made Amnesia.
Right.
Which is by far, to this point right now, I still think like Soma is actually really good. And then after when I'm done with Soma, I will be looking at a little game called Blood Bowl 2, which mixes Warhammer with football.
We actually have a review of Soma on our website, and it's sort of positive, but not 100% positive.
Yeah, I'm getting a little mixed feelings playing it after, you know, because I played Amnesia, and it's got the same. It creates an amazing atmospheric horror environment, but I don't feel like it's as scary as its previous games, in my opinion. But there's more that I need to dive into until I can give like a really spot on review.
Okay.
I recently got really excited because I found Greninja and Lucario amiibos, so I'm now the proud owner of those. That's good news.
So how many do you own now?
I am up to like 7 now.
Okay.
More than I ever thought I would have, honestly.
Right, because I think it was like the first episode of our podcast, you said you only wanted to own like 3 amiibo, and now you're up to 7. So in 2 weeks, you're going to be up to 14, and by the end of the year, you're going to have like 52.
Yep. Like half of them, all just for Mario Maker or something.
Right.
Outside of that, I've just been playing a lot of Destiny and Mario Maker.
All right, so we're going to be making this show short this week, but I'm not sure. I'm not going to promise anything yet, but I might include the outtakes from last week's show, which ran extremely long, at the end of this show.
Everyone likes outtakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't we go ahead and take a break and get right into our main segment, a discussion of Year Walk. All right, stick around. Welcome back to N-Express, where we are at our main segment, a discussion of the indie hit Year Walk. You guys, this game is really weird. I don't even know. It's such a deception when you first start it. It's like kind of charming almost. Would you guys agree with that? Like aesthetically, it's kind of charming.
It's very storybook.
Yeah, exactly. The first jump scare hits you and you're like, oh crap, okay.
Okay. The thing about this game is when it started, I was automatically frustrated. I was like, how come I can't move in certain directions?
I have to say, like,
it's not a first person shooter.
Yeah.
It's not
moving sideways, it was like a little off putting. I don't know. It turned me off a bit.
Okay, so basically you can move left and right and front and back, but only at specific points. And the thing is I didn't notice the arrow that would pop up at the top and bottom of the screen. So I was always trying to advance because at the beginning you're told you have to walk through the woods to solve the mystery, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm trying to move up and then the damn thing won't move up. So I'm thinking like, hey, is there something wrong with my controllers or is the game bugged? And it took me, I swear to God, 10 minutes before I figured out how to actually move up.
Oh, no, and you're kidding. That would be incredibly frustrating.
I almost gave up. I was so angry. And then I understood how the game worked. And then we get to the credit sequence, and it took me like 20 minutes to figure out the credit sequence.
Me too. I was just watching. Waiting for something to happen. Nothing's happening.
I'm waiting. I'm like, okay, this is cool. Great atmosphere. I love the music. I'm like, okay, what's going on? And I'm waiting for like a jump scare 20 minutes later. It's still happening. I'm like, okay, I got to go to YouTube. So I go to YouTube, and I look up PewDiePie, who, by the way, I actually kind of really like PewDiePie now. I got to admit, I've been watching a lot of his videos. And so he's playing the game, and clearly he's played it before and or has a cheat book because he knows how to get past everything. He even makes fun of himself saying, oh, I'm not cheating, but he clearly is. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, it's the credit sequence, and you just have to spell out the title of the game before you can move on. I'm like, great, I feel like an idiot.
Yeah, so we should explain like what the game is about and how it controls. Like, you have to grab the title sequence. So basically this is based on old Swedish folklore or I guess an old Swedish like almost religious or spiritual practice of going on a year walk where you fasted for 24 hours in your house alone and then you went
outside.
Hope
you could see the future.
Yeah, hoping to see the future, right? Or encounter like the weird demons that were about and stuff, and all the mystical objects around. So you like they said, you can move sideways, which was kind of frustrating. But yeah, figuring out that you could grab things by holding down the ZL and ZR button. The ZL brings up a little reticule, I guess, and ZR actually will grab something. And that title sequence, yeah, like you, Ricky, I was just staring at it until I finally just started pressing buttons, and I accidentally grabbed one of the letters, and it appeared, and then I just started going through all of it.
Okay, well, at least you didn't have to go to YouTube like I did.
No.
The actual plot and the idea behind the game is really interesting because it's actually based on a script for a short film by the maker's best friend. So he wrote a screenplay for a film, and then he passed it along to him, and he's like, and you know what? This would make a great video game. Mm-hmm. And so I like the idea behind it, like, because it is based on Swedish folklore. But what is up with Sweden? Like, I've been to Sweden, and, like, what is up with the people in Sweden? Like, that they have to go on a year-long walk in the hopes of seeing the future, but it's a gamble because they might also run into spirits that could do harmful things to them, including killing them. That's a huge gamble just to see into the future.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I'd be willing to take that risk, but you know, crazy ideas can come to people when they're that far north, and they're in the dark. They're in the dark for that long during the winter. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of stoicism up in Sweden. I've been to Stockholm as well. It's they're a happy people, but they could be a slightly distant people as well.
So when I heard about this game, I was clearly intrigued. I wanted to play it, and I gotta admit, when you get that first jump scare, like Aaron was talking about, dude, I like jumped out of my chair, screamed so loud, totally unexpected, totally unexpected. I was expecting like a game like Child of Light, which we reviewed not too long ago.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Right. So it was totally unexpected. So when we get that first jump scare, it was kind of like bringing back terrible memories of the first time I played Five Nights at Freddy's.
It's sort of like from in the beginning of the game, like I felt like it was so enchanting, you know, it felt like Child of Light. Then the first jump scare happens, and then I from there on out, it pretty much set the tone of being a horror game. Because it's like I was hard pressed for thinking, I'm like, this is really a horror game? Like, what's going on?
You know, even at the beginning, I was there just seemed to be something wrong and off about the entire situation. It opens up kind of fairy tale esque, but
yeah.
When you, even before the title sequence, you're talking to someone, and that whole conversation felt off kilter to me and very foreboding. I still got a sense of creepy things are to come even before the title screen. So I was kind of like, the mood was set really well for me. I think the beginning of the game, the whole atmosphere of the game is perfect in that way for setting you up to know that bad things are coming. And anticipation is, you know, you need it for jump scares to work. You have to, people have to be kind of like on edge already.
They like I said, like they do set the tone pretty early.
Yeah.
I feel like already our story of just the credit sequence covers my genuine feelings about the game. Like, it's kind of restricting the movement.
Mm-hmm.
It once it sets its tone as scary, then it like it loses that initial, I guess, like evocativeness. Like you didn't see it coming and then it gets you, and so the rest of the time you're just ready for it.
Yeah.
So they can't quite recreate that. That's fair. It'd be impossible to recreate that. That first jump scare is pretty great. But then we were talking about the credit sequence and not knowing what to do. And I feel like that just describes this game so perfectly that it would be even faster if I wasn't like challenging myself to solve it without looking anything up. But there, eventually the puzzles just get to the point where you're like, I don't know and I don't care anymore.
I didn't start cheating until like I got to the church.
Okay.
But what do you mean by cheating? Because we should make it very clear that this game was released with a companion piece.
That's cool. And that's included on the gamepad. You get everything that the iOS game had in its companion piece on the gamepad, which is which is background into the story and to your walking in general and some of the little entities that exist, supposedly.
Well, not so much as cheating. Well, I mean, we say cheating, but so much as like saying like you get stumped in a level and it's like, okay, I give up. I'm going
to look up how to walk through
Into a walkthrough. I didn't turn into a walkthrough until I got to that church part where you had to walk or rotate the church. Technically, you're walking around the church.
Oh, you made a pretty... I only did it once, and it was... I will say, some of the puzzles are extremely obtuse in this game.
Yes.
You will be just wandering around. I must have wandered over the entire map 5 consecutive times in search for one thing that ended up being in a place I would have never suspected, even with the hints, because the game offers you some hints.
Yeah, the game offers hints. I mean, I made use of the hints. That's as far as I went.
This is the only puzzle I even used hints on, and I still couldn't figure it out. Their hints were so impenetrable.
Yeah.
I was like, what is going on here? And then when I finally looked it up, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I don't think I would have ever found this on my own. I might have, but it would have been by accident.
But it does give a lot of hints. Like, it'll give you hint 1, hint 2, hint 3, hint 4, and it'll keep on giving you hints if it realizes you're not...
This particular puzzle involved multiple things, and maybe you know what I'm talking... You have to go collect multiple things. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
In the end, I'm like,
to give to another thing by the river.
Are you talking about Church Grimm?
I'm not the Grimm. I'm talking about the horse in the river.
The killed fetuses there. Yeah, you have to collect... The souls.
Yeah, all right. I guess we can spoil this because it is a game that's been on iOS.
The Brook Horse.
And it's not
a lot. Yeah, the Brook Horse. Yeah.
Okay, so there was one fetus that was in your gamepad, if you guys remember. And
it was in your...
Where is this thing? And their hint was just, it might be in your hands. But I'm like, I don't know what that means. So I went and I started reading about the fetuses. I'm reading about, are there any hints in this? Because I read everything that the guy was, all the information the guy supplied. But I didn't scroll down far enough to see... the fetus that was in... Anyway, I'm giving away a solution.
Yeah, but you guys didn't notice that, the part where you find that fetus is the encyclopedia in the game, but you didn't notice that it was bloodied up?
Yeah,
the icon was bloodied?
I did.
Yeah.
I did not notice that. That's the only puzzle I used a walkthrough or hints for.
Ah,
I was determined to do the rest, but that one just had me stumped for a half an hour, and I was like, I'm not gonna put up with this anymore.
Okay, so for anyone who hasn't played the game, just to give a bit of insight here, so we're talking about Brook Horse, okay?
Yeah.
And it's a water-dwelling horse, and he lures children into, I guess, his part of the woods, whatever you want to call it. And he kills the children by drowning them in water. This is how creepy and dark and twisted Swedish this game is.
Yeah, this is
but this is based on Swedish folklore. Yeah.
Well, actually,
that's kind of folklore.
Actually, this comes from Greek mythology. At least I think it does, because there's a story in Greek mythology that's very similar to the Brook Horse.
You know, a lot of those things made their way around. A lot of those archetypes made their way around every kind of mythology, but. I believe this one was strictly based on Swedish mythology. I can't remember. I read about it, but
it is like this. The idea of the game, Yearwalk, is based on Swedish folklore.
No, I meant the horse too. Is definitely present in Swedish mythology.
Okay, so the weird thing is that you as the player, and it's like a point of view game, you have to help Brook Horse to try to find the spirits of 4 dead kids. And take them, I guess, to the afterlife? I'm not entirely sure.
Well, he just takes them
he has something you want, and you need to give him these 4 fetuses in order to get what you want. And I sort of took that as meaning you were an accomplice with the Brook Horse in murdering these children. That's sort of how I saw it.
Okay, but the thing about this game, and I don't think that we can actually spoil the game because it doesn't necessarily give you answers. I guess there is sort of a true ending to some degree, but what I understood from the game was basically you're dead and you killed the love of your life, your fiance, your girlfriend, whatever.
You're going to.
No, you have.
You have.
Oh, but you were looking into the future.
No, that's true. That's true. You're looking into the future.
Okay, but wait a minute. Are you looking into the future or are you looking into the past? That's what I was confused about.
So I believe Aaron's right. You're looking into the future because that's what you go on a year walk for.
Yeah, that's what you do the year walk for, is to see what's going to happen in the future.
And at the very end, he sees the future.
Okay, so but then you can't be dead. We are
totally spoiling this, but...
Oh, you can't... You
can't be dead then, because if you're dead, then you're not looking into the future.
That's right. You're not dead, but then there's some text afterwards that explains that you were tried and executed for the murder of this woman. There's a postscript to all of that.
Okay, so I think we can all agree that the actual story, the script, is pretty kick-ass. Like, yeah. I mean, just it us is. Talking about it, it's
very
amazing,
absorbing,
but
yeah.
How do you guys feel about the gameplay? Tim, you don't seem to be a huge fan.
No, I overall, I like it. I think it's a really, really fun puzzle game. And I like the... It's like, very rarely do I feel like you have a game this riddling that has jump scares. Mm-hmm. Not that I remember playing ever. So I really like that. I like that it's such a unique indie game. It's not just like a platformer. It's something very different. So I really respected that. And I really liked its source. Its source kind of reminded me of when we were playing Never Alone. Like just continuing a culture and preserving that in some way that isn't a movie or a book. So I was like, that's really cool. I really love that. It's like Sweden's like mythology. That's really, really fun. Mm-hmm. So overall, really like the game. I guess I was probably rushing way more than I should have. I had time, like a time crunch. So when it came to like riddles that were just like too obtuse, too hard to solve rapidly, I was just kind of like, at some point, you guys are just being jerks about it. And not, it's like not like you stop and think about it. It's like, oh, you just dick around until it's solved, you know?
See, you know what's funny is I totally disagree, because I think nowadays the problem is, when I'm playing video games, I feel like the video game is holding my hand, and it really bugs me. I miss the good old days where you had to figure things out. The good old days when you had something like Nintendo Power and or the Nintendo Hotline, and you would have to give these people a call to try to figure out how to solve The Legend of Zelda, like the original game, for example. Because if you didn't have a guide, you would not be able to figure out how to beat The Legend of Zelda. Like,
but is that a good thing, though? Is it a good thing that you can't beat a game unless you have a guide?
But the thing is, the guide comes with the game, so well, the clues totally are still in front of you. You just have to look for the clues. But at the same time, this is the kind of game where you have to take notes. And so I don't know. It depends on what kind of game you prefer on playing.
I was taking notes playing this game actually. Solve so many puzzles.
Yeah, I think you have to take notes in order.
Yeah,
to
you have to take notes.
For example, I think the first time I started taking notes is when you go to the place where there's like two owls.
Yep.
Like
the puppet is dancing to or something.
Yeah, you have to push buttons in order to trigger an effect.
But that's no different than, say, Majora's Mask, where you have to play the song by specifically pressing a sequence of buttons in a specific order, and you have to know what they are, so you have to take down notes.
Yeah, and the clues to find you have to do certain things in order to get that sequence out of the game in the first place. No, that I don't have any problem. Here's my thing with this game, that some of the puzzles I really, really enjoyed, and some of them were just tedious, I guess, more so than anything else. I didn't mind. I don't mind having to figure things out. And like I said, I only did that one time. That's the only time I even asked for a hint from the game, too. And I still couldn't figure it out. And that was when I finally resorted to a walkthrough, just for one specific thing. Otherwise, I like being able to figure this out. But either there were a couple of problems that I had. Like, some of the puzzles are just, like I say, they're a little tedious, and they just amount to simply running errands.
Yeah.
And also, the world was kind of empty with things I could interact with. I would have liked to have just more interaction and maybe get some of my history of this world contextually, as opposed to having to just read the gamepad.
Well, but the thing is...
It's a pretty empty map.
It is, but the thing is, okay, so as opposed to Never Alone, in which you have a title card appear on screen and you can choose to watch a documentary and or choose to continue playing the game, in this game you will see signs and letters and what have you posted on, say, trees and or at the side of a house. And then you can refer to your companion guide, which would then give you the history of this Swedish folklore. Mm-hmm. But you can do it outside of gameplay time, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I get what you're saying. I'm not going to argue, but I kind of love the look of this film and the atmosphere and the sound design. And so that is why I highly recommend this game. Like, I actually really love this game.
Don't get me wrong. I would recommend this game. It's not too long. I think it's, like, a great length. For like, what it is.
It's like 2 hours.
It's about 2 hours.
Yeah, but it's like in that capacity, it's very cinematic. It's like you don't have to commit a ton of time. Even like some indie games are really, really fun, but they just go on a little too long. You're like, I just kind of want something really quick and easy before I go back to everything else after review. I mean, maybe that's just the problem of like us as podcasters and writers. But this one was like a great length. And it's genuinely startling. I don't know if I'd ever say like it was really scary, but you will jump out of your pants, and I like that a lot.
It's got atmosphere. When it works really well. And I nothing's broken. I just mean when it catches you, it catches you really well. Like you're totally into it. And some of the puzzles are very cool. And actually, I loved the process of puzzling them out. It's just that, you know, some of the other ones are, like I say, more running errands. I did like this game. And I think it finishes really well, too.
Okay, so hold on a second. Let's just rewind for a second. So what we have here is we have a game that's essentially an indie game. It's a horror game. It scares the shit out of you because the jump scares really work. They're very effective. But it's also got this creepy atmosphere, this brooding sense of dread in every single frame. The artwork is beautiful. It's constructed in a series of 2D planes, like a pop-up book. I think one of you guys mentioned how it looks like a pop-up book.
Yeah, that's a great description.
The sound design is incredible. Everything from the score to the sound effects is just intense and nail-biting. Like, it creates this nail-biting suspense. And it's got this wicked-ass story, and it's got this ending, which leaves you scratching your head because we ourselves are not entirely sure what's what.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's another ending after that too. I don't know if any of you guys went back and actually replayed it to get the truth.
I only went through two endings.
No, there are only two. I mean, you play through it once, and then it asks you if you want to replay again, and you can get the second ending after you replay.
Whoa! Well,
that comes after you open that wooden chest.
Yeah, you can get the ending right away. Like within 5 minutes, you can get the second ending of replaying. It's just you have to. Do you remember the clock-like chest that was there that you couldn't interact?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's
so
that's
they
the
give you a
I...
code. Exactly. They give you a code to unlock that chest, and that's the second ending. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay. So I thought.
So there's a third ending.
No, he's saying that's
okay. So that's okay.
That's the second ending. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I figured. Okay.
But that is a different ending. I mean, it is something that changes the way the first game, everything that you did in the first game and the way it ends up and the way you feel about how your first playthrough ends up. This second ending completely changes that.
Well, it completely changes your character.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's weird because a lot of people have different theories as to what this game's about, and I don't really want to get into it because if you haven't played the game, I think you should enjoy the story. The thing about this game is, Tim, you're right. It's only about 2 hours of gameplay. It's about 2 hours of gameplay and maybe 10 hours of problem solving. But
yeah,
it is.
But honestly, 2 hours of gameplay. I mean, look, I was stubborn. So when I got to the credit sequence, I did not want to resort to looking up answers on the internet. So I was trying to figure out what the hell was going on. And then I was like, okay, I got to look. And once I learned how to get past the credit sequence, it kind of all started to slowly make sense. Like, and then I realized, oh, you can have a hint and you can ask for a second and third and fourth hint. And so the hints really helped me along the way. I did use the companion piece and I did look for clues on the internet, I would say about two or three more times afterwards. But for the majority of the game, I was pretty much able to get by and figure out things by myself. But yeah, the thing is, you're right, Tim. That's the problem is nowadays there's so many games that we want to play that we don't want to sit down and try to solve a problem and or a puzzle in a video game that's going to take us more than 5 minutes because you have like 16 other games to play. But I don't think that's a fault of the game makers and or the game. I think it's just us and we're playing too many games. And it's a good problem to have.
Here's the thing.
I think through the story and the text that you can find in the game, I think it offers a lot of content just for something that's 2 hours. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of reading you can do and that's really cool. There's a lot to like absorb.
There's a lot in the game to immerse yourself even further into its universe.
And I guess my whole thing is, like you said, everything that you described as being good about it is good. The ambiance, you know, the look of it, everything like that. It's all fantastic, and it's totally worth the trip. As far as the puzzles go, this is the only area where I think it's not so much that I don't have the time to do a puzzle. It's that I don't have the time to do these puzzles because they're not great puzzles. I'm just going to say that right off the bat. These are like middling, they're average puzzles. They're not super cleverly constructed puzzles or anything like that.
Well, they feel exactly like a phone game.
Yeah. They're kind of designed where you just have to do a lot of legwork in order to get them. Like, you have to look through everything, or you know you have to do all that. It's not like they constructed stuff that's amazing. It's not like they made Captain missed. Toad, where they have these incredible little box puzzles that
right.
solutions can be ingenious to. Nothing super ingenious here. It's just that you do a lot of legwork. So everything else, though, I liked. I didn't enjoy the game. Or I should say I didn't. The puzzles are fine. They're nothing special. But the game itself, the story, the visuals, those are all fantastic, top notch.
So here's the thing about the game. I just want to make sure I'm not confused here. So the character in the game is not dead, because I was under the impression that he was told to commit suicide. So he commits suicide in order to save the love of his life, whose name I believe is Stina or Steina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is he dead? Did he kill himself? Because when we
okay. Here's the thing. So, you explain, Aaron.
No, go ahead. No,
I'm with you. So what I see is you play through the game once and you see the future of what you're going to do. You play through the game a second time and now you have a chance to prevent that. You're given a second chance when you restart the game.
But you have to kill yourself.
That's right.
But you're getting a note from the future when you open that chest.
That's right.
Well, it's because the note comes from a researcher who realizes what you've done. Like, you've basically killed your girlfriend. I'm assuming it's his girlfriend. I don't think they're married. Because
they're lovers, but she was going to marry somebody else. That's why he's going on this.
So you, the character Daniel, kills Stina because I guess you're jealous. Because she's going to marry someone else. But then you get a message from someone in the future who knows what you did and tells you that in order to save Stina's life, you have to kill yourself.
Yeah. So the idea is a year walk. You're trying to see into the future, right? So when you first boot up this game, you're going on the year walk, and at the end of the game, you see into the future and you have killed this person and you get executed for it. So and when you restart the game and you do your second playthrough, you are given the opportunity now to change the future by getting a note from the future to change what was going to happen and not kill her by killing yourself instead, because you're going insane is what this note essentially tells you.
So either way, you end up dead, because you either end up killed for committing a crime and or committing suicide.
That's right.
Super
cheery ending.
It was a great ending. I thought they did that so well, too.
No, I like it.
Somber,
I think,
very somber.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No matter what you did, it was just somber. because I was going to say, like, when I knew that you had a second chance to correct it, I was like, oh, good, I could get a happy ending, and then you...
That's what I thought.
You get to the second ending, and you're like, no, wait a second, this is even worse.
Well, it's not. I mean, it's better, because she lived,
Well, it's
right?
better, but, you know, it's still like...
Good for me.
you know what I find interesting about this game? So the game was made for iOS, right? And then later was released on the Wii U. Like, I think it was released 2 weeks ago. But the thing about the controls is, as much as I complain and bitch about the controls, is what I do appreciate about the control scheme is it builds the mechanics and motions around the device. It doesn't try to shoehorn in a specific control scheme. It builds it around the device that the game is meant to be released on. And so that is why it works. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the creators of this game say that the best way to play it is actually on the Wii U using the gamepad.
They did. Yep. They said this is the definitive edition.
You have everything right there.
Yep.
You have your notes, everything.
And they changed changed some of the puzzles to better fit the Wii U gamepad. So they're slightly different than on the iOS version.
All right, listen, I highly recommend this game. If you haven't picked it up, I think it cost me $9, which is great, because next week I want to review Extreme Exorcism, and that game costs like $25. I'm not complaining because I haven't played it yet, and I hear it's a great game, but there's a huge difference between $25 and $9 in terms of like the amount of money I have in my wallet right now.
And here in the U.S., Tim, well, it was $7, wasn't it? $6.99, I think is what it was.
I think so.
It's not not a high price to pay for a good story, good little trip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if you're looking for a spooky experience in time for Halloween, then this is a good go-to right here. I think it fits the month well, it fits our horror theme well, and it's really unique. You got to experience it.
Yeah, I really like the Night Raven. Last thing I'm going to say, the Night Raven is really kick-ass. He's like an undead bird, zombie bird.
I got confused at first. I was like, what the hell am I saying? I'm opening the bird's mouth, but nothing's happening.
You know, there were a couple times like that, but you get them though, right? Because you start just doing natural video game things, and eventually you figure it out just by that.
Yeah, I know.
Push buttons. Awesome. When in doubt, push buttons.
Just tap.
Everything. Awesome. So go ahead and buy that game. It's worth it. in the meantime, stick around for our review of the movie Silent Hill. We'll be right back.
Honey, sometimes when you go to sleep, you go on a little walk, and sometimes you talk about a place.
I don't remember.
That's why we're going to go there, so you can remember.
Ago.
I don't know what's happening. Do you know what's going on here?
This place is completely cut off.
Only the Dark One opens and closes the door to Silent Hill.
Hey! Where is she? I'm trying to find my wife.
She looks exactly like Sharon.
Why?
Welcome back, where we are at our final segment of the day, a review of the film Silent Hill. You guys, I am always on the fence about this movie because in terms of like horror, if you really want to call it horror, it's not super scary. What do you guys think?
No.
No, it's definitely not.
It's more like a trip, if anything. It fits the theme of Silent Hill really, really well, where it's like mentally perplexing.
Yeah.
But never scary.
What do you mean by scary, though? Because here's the thing. So I watch a lot of horror films, and because I'm, like, quote-unquote, an expert in horror, people keep asking me, like, I want to watch a scary movie. What's a scary movie? I'm like, well, what do you mean by scary? Are you saying, like, you want to watch a movie, when the movie ends, you're sort of afraid to walk alone at night because you think someone's going to, like, haunt you? Are you maybe thinking about, like, blood and gore and special effects? And or are you talking about, like, sound design and jump scares? Like, what?
Well, I'm thinking a creepy vibe. That's what I want to get out of a horror
I think there's
movie.
A big difference between, like, startling. I tend to describe a movie as startling as opposed to scary. And then there's something that's so dramatically different and unusual that it sticks in your mind. And then when you're trying to sleep at night, you're, like, 100% positive that whatever was in that movie is right behind you.
Right. Yeah, good horror should seep in, I think, to your subconscious
exactly.
on some level.
You know? Like, stick with you.
Here's the thing. So I live in, quote-unquote, a haunted house. Like, my family house has, like, some serious, interesting, and creepy backstory to it. Like, apparently the people that lived here before, their daughter died when she was, I think, like, 8 or 9 years old. So when I was growing up in this house, there was a lot of weird things that would happen to me. And also the people that live in front of me, their house is cursed to the point where 3 owners in a row died mysteriously. And
are you sure you got your guys' houses weren't built by the poltergeist real estate people?
let me finish the story. So, and the 4th owner that moved in, they adopted 2 kids. The 2 kids went crazy and tried to kill the parents and burned down the house. And then the next person that moved in committed suicide. And there's more to the story. My whole neighborhood is screwed up. Okay, there's been multiple suicides in this neighborhood, multiple murders. And I live in like a really quiet suburb. Like, Aaron, you know where I live, right? And yeah. You would never think this when you come and visit my family home. But there's all of these weird stories that surround the neighborhood. And the thing is, we did some research. So here's the thing. 2 quick stories. So when we first originally moved into this house, my grandma, who's very superstitious, had this bad feeling, this bad like omen about, like, she thought like the house was like sort of like haunted, right? She was like very superstitious. And the neighbors told us about the daughter that lived in this house that died at a young age. And the neighbors have always told us about these weird stories that have happened. And also I did some research on the neighborhood, and like 100 years ago or a little bit more than 100 years ago, it used to be like a Native American reserve.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, totally. I'm not lying. And there was some sort of oil explosion and or factory explosion. And everyone within a radius, like, I don't know how, what the distance is, but everyone within, say, like 5 or 6 streets next to the street I grew up in, every single one of those people died because the whole neighborhood lit up in flames. So when I watch like a ghost movie, like a poltergeist film or a film about a haunted house, I get creeped out. If I watch something like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think it's amazing. I think that's like an amazing movie, but it doesn't creep me out. So I get what you're saying, but it really applies to the person, right? Like a lot of people don't believe ghosts. Like when I used to review horror films with my co-host Simon Howell on the Sort of Cinema podcast, he just doesn't believe in ghosts and or the supernatural and or spirits and or afterlife. So for him, ghost movies were really boring. For some people, they actually scared the shit out of them. The thing about this movie, Silent Hill, is I still think it's in many ways the best video game adaptation of any movie I've seen yet, because it really captures the atmosphere and the dread of the actual video game. And despite the fact that a lot of people aren't big fans of the story or the plot of the movie, I just got to say that the actual plot of the video game is just as confusing as the movie, and the video game itself has like multiple endings.
Yeah.
I think that's hitting the nail on the head in that, like, that's exactly what I mean. It's not necessarily scary, but it's perplexing, and it's frustrating in how trapped and ensnared in the story and the game you get. And that's kind of like the point of Silent Hill. Like, thinking about the playable trailer that came out on the PlayStation not long ago, like, how long were you just stuck in that stupid hallway? And that's kind of the point, is it's like not necessarily always startling or scary. You're just trapped in this atmosphere, and at some point it just kind of gets under your skin.
You know, as a video game, that can work sometimes. As a movie, though, it's a little bit different. Yeah, you're not in control for one thing, and it can become just, you know, not worth your time sometimes. Not that I think this movie's not worth your time. It is, like you said, the best. I think it's the best video game movie, although that's not necessarily saying I think it's a great movie. As far as horror goes, you know, and this is one thing I understand, like, it is, it does depend on the person. If you're actually afraid of something, then a movie can affect you more. But a good movie can make, like, I don't necessarily believe that in an alien invasion, and I don't know what you guys think about Signs, but that movie creeped the hell out of me. And I had to walk home that night, and, you know, in the suburbs of Minnetonka, Minnesota, you know, where there's woods on either side of you. And, man, I was walking just a little bit faster at 1 a.m. that night. Yeah,
It's that one scene where they're watching that news clip and it's a birthday party.
Yeah, and it comes out.
And you realize that you're looking straight at an alien, and all of a sudden it moves and you didn't realize you were staring at it.
Yeah.
It's like the worst sensation ever.
No fear of that happening in real life. And yet a good, well-made movie, horror movie, can do that to you. And Silent Hill isn't quite that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I wasn't terrified and or scared watching this movie, and I saw this movie on the big screen, but I kind of look at this movie like a big piece of fan fiction, because the creators of this movie, and I'm specifically talking about the screenplay writer, Roger Avery, who also...
He was worked on Pulp Fiction, and
he was
a Quentin Tarantino collaborator with True Romance and...
Killing Zoe, et cetera, and the director is actually a French guy, Christophe Gans, who directed this movie called Le Pacte du Loup, like the Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Yeah, Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Have you seen it? It's like this weird crossover art film, horror film, martial
Monica
arts.
Bellucci.
Like werewolf. with Monica Bellucci. Yeah, very weird hybrid of different genres. So it's weird because you have this French director adapting a video game that's designed by a Japanese developer, and it's marketed at an American audience. So it's weird.
He was a big fan of the game, though. Did you read how he got the rights to make this movie? He actually sent a video message to Konami, kind of just pleading with them about how much he loved their video game series and how much he wanted to turn this into a movie. And that's what finally swayed them to give him the rights.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Him and Roger Avery, the two of them were huge fans of the video game series. And so that's what I mean about it's sort of like a fan fiction version of the video game, because it's how they interpret the story. Because from my understanding, when I watch the movie, I don't think it's so complicated. Like, I think that the mom and the daughter and even the female cop all die at the beginning of the movie. And so they are stuck in sort of like whatchamacallit.
Silent Hill, which is kind of a purgatory, yeah, I guess. Yeah.
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 No, I don't, you know, it's not the confusing part. Of the story elements that are confusing are kind of whatever. And I think mainly there's some dialogue problems in this movie, and there's a huge exposition dump at the end that just slows the whole movie down. Yeah. But I will say this, these guys nailed the look perfectly. This is the best looking video game movie out there. Like it looks so much, it's so evocative of the Silent Hill franchise. They got the textbook things right. And they even put little touches in to make it feel like the games, like finding clues here and there. And you know, there's a scene with the map where the main character has to memorize a map, and it looks just like the map from Silent Hill. Stuff like that is perfect. It's stuff that the Resident Evil filmmakers didn't go for. They didn't really try to make movies anything like those video games.
I can't wait to talk about Resident Evil, because, like, what the heck even happened?
I know, right? But, okay, I want to
These people did it right, though. They really, yeah, really no, made yeah. this feel like Silent Hill.
I would agree. It yeah. feels
at least,
like
at least they didn't make a rubber pyramid head.
Yes!
Okay, but I want to ask Aaron a question, because you raised up a very good point, is that the difference between a video game and a movie is we are not in control of the characters. So do you think that is the defining reason of why video games can't be properly adapted into movies?
I do.
No, I agree, because yeah. it's you driving the narrative as a player. I mean, you can take it as in whichever pace you want it to be.
I think it's more intense as a player to have to make choices when you really don't want to in a horror game.
Especially like, okay, in a horror game.
I get what I have to do, but my hands are sweating, and I'm like a little bit shaky, and I'm a little bit jumpy. And so it's just like really, really intense. When you're watching a movie, it's easier to disengage a little bit because you don't have to push the character forward. The character is just going to make the dumb choice for themselves.
Plus, it removes the whole sort of the darkness of playing like a survival horror game. Because it feels like when you watch the movie translated into the big screen, I feel like it's already scripted for you, you know?
We were just talking about Resident Evil, like, surround a character in a movie by zombies, and then I'm just like, I don't really like, they can get torn apart by the zombies and I'd be fine watching that. Mm-hmm. When you're controlling a character and you're swarmed by zombies, then it's like frantic is all hell.
And you know you only have two bullets left.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and the thing you guys are forgetting is because it's on our time. So if you die playing the video game, you have to restart, and time is precious.
That's right.
And so you don't want to have to die and restart. When you watch a movie, you know it's going to last 2 hours, and no matter what the outcome is, you have no control of it. And that's the main difference between the medium of film and video games. And that is why a lot of people think that it's really impossible, or not impossible, but it's really hard to take a video game and make it into a movie and make the movie actually better than the video game.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where, you know, the way that you're interacting with the video game is completely different than the way that you interact with a movie. And so the two can never really be, they can't be comparable in any way. And the way you tell a story in the video game is completely different than the way you tell a story in a movie. And so somehow a screenwriter is going to have to translate what they did for that video game and turn it into a movie. And they just have not figured it out yet.
Well, especially horror games, though. I feel like in horror games, in some of the ones I played, it's you discovering the story and not someone else telling you what the story is.
That's right, because you find scraps of paper on the ground and you read.
Yeah, exactly. Which is the key to any good horror video game. It's the mystery, the sense of not knowing what's going on
and knowing that somebody wrote that note and they're dead now. And you're reading the words of a dead man. Like that, I remember the first time I played Resident Evil 2 before I played Resident Evil 1. And the first time I was on a bus and there was a corpse with a briefcase. And I read what was in his briefcase. And there were notes about his family and notes about what he had to do at work that day. And there he is right there and he's dead. And that really hit home. That's a different way of telling a story and providing horror that a movie cannot do.
I'm playing Fatal Frame right now. And there's one point where you're finding notes of a character. And then his ghost shows up and tries to kill you. So I'm like, no, like, I'm not even sorry you're dead now, but now you need to go away.
Well, you know what's really funny is you bring up Fatal Frame, which is something I want to review in the upcoming weeks, but I really want to review a game which is not released on any Nintendo console, but it's called Until Dawn, which was released on the Sony PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm. And yep. In that game, you basically control the characters. So the scenario is a typical teen slasher film, right?
Yeah.
And when you play the game, you get to control the decisions the characters make, and so there could always be a different ending, and you never know who's going to survive and or die. I haven't yet played the game, but I was talking to one of my buddies who works at EB Games here in Montreal, which, again, is the equivalent of GameStop. I kind of feel like I have to keep reminding people EB Games is.
We used to have EB Games here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Yeah. So there you go. So I'm talking to the guy who works there, and he was like, yeah, so I played the game. You know what? It was a lot of fun, except for the fact that when the game ended, everybody survived, and we were so disappointed.
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
Damn it.
Not one person died, because they just happened to make all of the right decisions for each and every single one of the characters that nobody died.
Wow.
But the thing about a game like Until Dawn is you get to control each and every single one of their actions. And so you control the outcome to some degree. Like, you don't know what the outcome will be, but you are directly responsible for how the game and therefore the story ends. That's not the same with a movie. Mm-hmm. I would love to see a filmmaker try to make a TV show and or film in which you get to decide the outcome. And I remember that there was a movie called Clue, of course, based on the board game that came out. It's actually an amazing movie. So funny, right?
Very funny. Yeah, it's very
so
funny,
good.
Yeah.
And when they released this movie in the theaters, they actually had different endings. So you can buy a ticket for the movie, but you weren't guaranteed what ending you would get. So you would walk out of the movie and it would be, I don't know, like Colonel Mustard, who's the killer. And then Patrick would walk out of the movie and it would be Scarlett, who's the killer. And I would walk out of the movie and it would be like the butler, who's the killer. Mm-hmm. But you're still not controlling the outcome or who the killer is. It's still the movie deciding, even though there's three or four different endings.
Yeah.
I guess the same applies to books and movies. Like, when a book is adapted to a motion picture, you read a book, and so it's all your imagination doing the work. Like, yeah, the book describes the characters and the scenarios and so on and so forth, but a good part of it is still your imagination. So when you go see a movie adaptation of a book, and you're like, oh, I didn't picture the character to look and or sound and or talk like that, so that's weird. That's because that's how you envision the person. And maybe that has a lot to do with the text as well, but it still has a lot to do with your imagination. But that said, the reason why I think that this is still the best video game adaptation to movie is because I think the director here does a really good job in just building suspense, creating a mood and atmosphere. I think the special effects are pretty damn good. I kind of feel like this movie is a mix of Clive Barker movies and Japanese horror films like Ringu. Mm-hmm. That's what Silent Hill feels and looks like, but it also has a touch of late 70s, early 80s horror films, like before slasher films became the big thing and Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, and so on and so forth were making all the money at the box office, that people stopped making movies that were really about mood and atmosphere, and it all became about cheap scares and boobs and nudity, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the thing about Silent Hill. So this movie came out in 2006, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that critics were really unfair to the movie, because a lot of critics that reviewed the movie weren't fans and or familiar with the video game, but because it was based on a video game, they automatically went in hating the movie. And I think that's really unfair. And then video gamers, people who played the video game, went in and they just didn't like the movie because it didn't feel and or work exactly like the video game. And I also think that's unfair because it's a different medium.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think critics especially, they were unfair in that time period on video game movies because they didn't like them. They didn't like something about video games, period. And there's always that big famous debate between Roger Ebert and gamers as to whether or not video games are art. But I will say this. I mean, Silent Hill is an okay, as far as just a movie, viewing it simply as a movie, because I really didn't see a whole lot of the Silent Hill games. I remember watching somebody play through the second one. So I understand that that's what the mood of this is like. So when I watch Silent Hill, I see it as just a movie, just a horror movie. And it's got its share of problems. This is the one problem the video game movies have, is they just haven't quite But making a good movie is hard, and they haven't made a good video game movie yet. It's not that it can't be done. I think it can be. I think there was a good movie in this Silent Hill concept. They almost made it, I think, but instead they made kind of an average movie to me. It's not bad, but it's not going to knock anyone's socks off, and they're not going to necessarily remember it. But I think they could have. There were certain things that they could have done to make this a little bit better. Like I mentioned, that exposition dump at the end, that's atrocious and unforgivable for any decent writer to have done that, where they just basically, oh, God, we've confused you up until this point. I tell you what, we're going to tell you the entire story now at the very end and take away from all the momentum that we just built up. You know, this is what holds these movies back from getting recognized. Like, there's some skill involved in making a movie and a little bit of luck sometimes, but they just haven't made the great one yet.
Yeah, it's not a perfect movie. It's not a great film. I just think, unfortunately, it's the best video game adaptation we've had so far because it's plagued with bad dialogue, a muddled plot, and it's a little too long.
A terrible subplot that is absolutely meaningless involving Sean Bean as a husband who has nothing to do. Nothing to do.
At least we get Sean Bean.
Yeah, I know. And you know what, guys? He doesn't die.
It's like the first time.
Right.
But he just runs around shouting his wife's name. It is a thankless role. could have absolutely been cut out of the movie. I guess the studio executives were worried that there wasn't enough of a male presence in the movie, and so they forced Roger Avery and Christoph Gans to put that in there.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. And the last thing I'm going to say is I think that this is the most visually alive film based on a video game. Like, I think just the visuals alone and even the sound design is interesting enough to watch it. Yep. There's one sequence in which the female cop is tied up to this gigantic ladder and they have to slowly lower the ladder down to a giant pit of fire and she starts to burn.
And bubble. She blisters. Ugh, it's disgusting.
Yeah, that was, like, I think the highlight of the movie for me.
I liked the very first time that she encounters whatever those little children demon things are. She sees somebody tied up and barbed wire to a fence, and she's walking up to them. They're looking at her through goggles. It's a very creepy, weird image. And behind her, the very first scare that you get after the sirens have gone off, behind her there's movement, and those little children things start coming up. That to me was done really well. This movie shot really well. Visually, it's very cool to look at.
It is.
Awesome. So, would we recommend Silent Hill? Worth a watch?
For fans of Silent Hill, yeah.
If you're a horror fan and or a Silent Hill fan, you could do a lot worse than watch this movie.
Yeah, you could watch House of the Dead.
Or you could watch Rubber Nemesis and Resident Evil 2.
It's one of those things that, like, as a horror fan, sometimes you want the next best horror movie, and then that other, like, the other half of you just wants to watch the worst movie you've ever seen. And this is not either of those things. But it's visually evocative, and it's an enjoyable watch. Mm-hmm. So I would say watch it. Sweet. I think that does it for N-Express this week. Let's go ahead and find out where we can find everyone online. Ricky, where are you online?
You can find me over at popoptic.com. That's popotiq.com, where I not only host the N-Express podcast, but I have my horror movie genre podcast, the longest running genre film podcast online called Sorted Cinema. I also review TV shows like The Flash, which I'm about to watch, The Leftovers, video games, etc., etc. And on Twitter, PopOptic. Join us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page for N-Express. Thank you to everyone who joined our page so far.
What about you, Aaron? Where can we find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at TheCharmless6, and you can also find me hosting a gaming podcast over at www.ftwgamingpodcast.com.
Awesome. Patrick Murphy, where are you?
You can find me in the video games section at popoptic.com and also on Twitter at PS_porcupine. I would really like to know what people think the best video game movie is, especially the best horror video game movie. That would be if anybody wants to leave a comment on the Facebook page, that would be great.
Yeah. I am Tim Mason. You can find me at the Freemason, MAISON, on Twitter. You can also find me in the game section of popoptic.com, where I have another podcast all about Destiny. So if you're playing that, or you want to recommend a movie, or just talk about horror, because it is horror month, one of my favorite times of the year, feel free to tweet at me or leave a message on the site. Other than that, tune in next time for an engaging discussion of extreme exorcism and some more horror fun. We'll talk to you then.
So, Rick, did you get a glass of wine or water? I'm kind of curious now.
Yeah, Aaron and I are both curious about that.
No,
yeah.
I got a glass of white wine. Why?
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, okay. Sure. Well, because we were saying, I'm like, well, if we're going to get loose, I might as well get a glass of scotch then.
Oh, my God. I always podcast with a drink. What are you talking about? Unless if it's in the morning. Like, that's what I don't like about Sorted Cinema right now. We're podcasting, like, in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I can't drink, so I just have coffee, but I usually have a glass of wine when I podcast.
Ah, interesting.
So every Nintendo podcast now, I will have a glass of scotch with me on the side.
We would be very happy to have the chance of handling your new 12-inch long playing records, and I would like to see you again in your office early next week.